we had the choice to say, hey, you know what? You're the new person. Don't ask those questions. We've been here longer, so we know better. Or we could say, hey, you know, we have been here. We can do those things, and we're going to do them on an annual basis because we think they're important.
This is Code 3, the Firefighters Podcast, hosted by award-winning journalist Scott Orr. Now, here's Scott.
That's right, and I will not let Parkinson stop me. Thank you for joining me today for another edition of Code 3. This is the show that gives you all the information on a firefighting topic you need in about 20 minutes. Let's get started. This week's show is related to last week's. If you haven't heard episode 344 with Jennifer Stanislaw, go ahead and listen to it. It dovetails nicely with this one. On this episode, we're talking about the importance of setting standards for probie training. Years ago, that training consisted of handing a probie a mop as often as a ladder. It was designed to, quote, teach a solid work ethic. But just as hazing has mostly faded away in the firehouse, new firefighters expect better training on the techniques they'll need in the field. Their bosses expect them to know those tactics, too. That's why today's guest says it's important to set the bar for probies and then keep raising it. He has some ideas of how you should do that. Jesse Marcotte is the training chief for the Northville Township, Michigan Fire Department. He's a member of the UL-FSRI Training Advisory Committee, and he served as a board member of the ISFSI. He also spoke on today's topic at FDIC 2024. And Jesse Marcotte joins me now. Welcome to Code 3.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So today we're talking about probies. There was a time when being a probie meant you were at the bottom of the food chain, and you were treated like it. I mean, yeah, they trained new guys, but veteran firefighters loved hazing them too. But that's different now. Why have things changed?
You know, that's a great question. I think the reason it's changed is because everything around us has changed. The environment that we work in is different. The building construction is different. The fuel load is different. People's backgrounds when they get into the fire service are different. And the mission of the fire service is a little bit different as well. We don't have, in a lot of places, we don't have 100 or 200 people lined up to be firefighters. The reality is we have to be better prepared to adjust and adapt and evolve to the people that we're hiring today, to prepare them for a very vast mission, a mission that often includes some level of EMS responsibility, whether that's basic life support or advanced life support, transport or non-transport, and then obviously all of the fire and rescue skills that go along with that. So if we want our people to be at the level that we need them to be at, for each of the communities that we serve, then it's our responsibility as an organization to realize we're not just hiring people from the neck down anymore. We're hiring people for their character, and we're understanding that we need to train them for skill in all the various disciplines that we're responsible for.
How important is having a department probationary firefighter training program?
I think it's paramount. You know, I talk to people and I'd like to say that your fire service career is a choose your own adventure story. And while some of us ended up being company officers, lieutenants, captains, or chief officers, battalion chiefs, or admin chiefs, or maybe even the chief of the department, we all started in the same position. And that was a probationary firefighter. And that probationary firefighter position really should set build the foundation for our entire career. And, you know, if we don't have a program, if we don't have a baseline to go from, then it's hard to have a real expectation of where people are going to end up. Our strategy can't be built on simply hope. The idea is to have a program in place that identifies what we want our firefighters to be and then gives them a roadmap on how they're going to get there.
Now, some smaller agencies aren't going to have an easy time of it. They'll probably rely on firefighter 1 and 2 classes or even another department's academy to train their new guys. Are they going to end up with inferior employees if they have to do it that way?
Absolutely not. So I'll give you the example of myself. I've been in the career fire service for the last, this is my 22nd year. And prior to this, I worked for a small paid out call fire department in my hometown. And I have to tell you that a lot of the lessons that I am bringing with me today in terms of how we shape and mold our probationary program are lessons I learned on a small paid out call department. Treat people with respect, the importance and impact of effective mentoring and coaching. So it's not so much dictated by the size of our organization. It's really a matter of the work that we're willing to put in for it and the connections we're willing to make and the standards we're willing to set organizationally.
You advocate using more training time spent with other members of the firehouse, not doing tasks to prove their work ethic. Why is that important?
Yeah, so I think a lot of times if you were to ask somebody why they like the service, why they like the fire service, right? Aside from responding to incidents and going to fires and all those sorts of things, I think people would say naturally that they like it because of the tradition of camaraderie, the family atmosphere, and the general camaraderie that comes with working with exceptional people day in and day out. And with it being such a team sport, the fire service that is, we don't want to put somebody in solitary confinement, for lack of better terms, and have them, you know, bury their head in a mop book and become best friends with the mop bucket. We want them to be interacting with the people that they're going to be working with for the entirety of their career. That provides a lot of opportunities for our current staff as well, in terms of demonstrating credibility, building meaningful relationships. And we're not saying just like, you know, be everybody's best friend. We're saying build a professional relationship, demonstrate the same qualities that we expect from our new hires, and collectively, through that those shared experiences and that camaraderie, we become better together.
Your department has replaced binders full of paper with electronic tablets. That's an expensive upgrade. What advantages do you get with it?
That's one of those things that I talk about, and the concept is, you know, tradition meets innovation. So we maintain the things that we believe to be paramount to our fire service culture and to the fire department culture in our organization. And then we leverage technology or other opportunities to be innovative. Our task books went from a paper spiral-bound book, which was a fine program for a long time, and we put that into a digital format. So really the cost of it was simply the time spent on putting that program together by myself and other members of our organization that produced that document. It's actually designed to work on your desktop. It can work on your cell phone. It can work on your personal tablet as well. But we have also started purchasing iPads. We just have a small fleet of iPads, for lack of better terms, and we issue it to our new hires. And then when they complete that program, they give it back. Can we give it to the next member that we bring on board? The reason we did that was it really helped us with consistency. It put everything that person needs at their fingertips. So that iPad or their phone or tablet is really a one-stop shop. All the expectations for them are in there. Our department history, how the program functions, what is a task book. They can click the lesson plans, pull them up. It takes them to all the outside resources, whether it's something that was produced by FSRI or ISFSI or some other association or organization in the fire service. We want people to have all that information at their fingertips, and putting that in a digital format was something we did based on the feedback of the last several people that we brought into our organization. It was actually kind of a fun challenge, which absolutely had its fair share of trial and error along the way.
How much weight do you give critiques of the teaching methods and programs that you take from the people who've gone through them?
One of the first places we look for feedback is on the new member of our organization. So we actually seek feedback from them for the most part on a daily basis, which may seem like a lot, but we always want to know what's working and what needs to be improved. How are we meeting your expectations? How can we better meet your expectations? So we establish that dialogue right out of the gate with every new member that we bring on board. And again, there are some things that do not change with respect to the skills, the knowledge, skills, and abilities we expect people to build over time. But what we can change is the way we're delivering that material, or we can titrate certain things to affect by spending more time on one category based on feedback versus another category. The first place we really look is for the people who are going through the program. Another place that we look is our command staff. We also look at the senior members of our organization and the members that are off probation. And then once somebody gets off of probation and they've completed that program, we make sure to close that loop now that they've seen the program as a whole, before they forget, you know, the intricacies of the program. What were the things you liked? What were the things we can do better? A lot of times they have a hand in improving that part of the program as well.
How do you make your probies feel valued and fulfilled? And I ask that because isn't that just a little touchy-feely?
It's funny because we could say that is touchy-feely. And two of the things that are really important in today's fire service are recruitment and retention. And I think the other word we can attach to that is respect. So we want to build respect. We certainly want to be respected, and we certainly want to earn the respect of the new person that we're bringing on board. With that being said, that's part of what I was talking about before. Tradition meets innovation. So traditionally, we know what was expected of new hires. A lot of the people in the fire service that are coming into the fire service know what was expected. But we also know that we want to build a relationship with these people, and we don't want to go through this loop of training people, getting them in our organization for a few months or a few years, losing them, replacing them, and doing the same thing over and over again. So making sure we provide some opportunities for people to be to receive some validation and a sense of fulfillment. There are some cool ways that we can do that at any fire department around the country that isn't necessarily just, you know, being warm and fuzzy, but really what we're doing is providing an opportunity to sink or swim. So one of the things that we started doing was like a capstone project. And that capstone project, it can be, for the most part, anything of your choosing, and you have the resources within your purview to make that happen. And it's a great opportunity to be instantly connected to the organization and to have the opportunity to affect positive change. So those projects range on all kinds of different categories, but it is an opportunity pretty early on to receive that validation and to receive that fulfillment given the completion of the program at a successful level.
Can you give me an example of one of those projects?
I can absolutely give you an example of that. There's a couple examples that I really enjoy. Recent examples. One is as we continue to adapt and evolve with our tactics and our strategies and try to be really good at what we do, we decided we were going to build one of the FSRI host stream mechanics props. So we hired a gentleman who had a natural interest in construction, but was also very passionate about fire service training. And we provided him essentially with the budget to build, take that host stream mechanics prop from concept to actual product. And it was something that he worked on for several weeks. He did a fantastic job. And now that individual has gone on to assist many other state organizations or fire departments across the country in building that prop. So that was a good example of it as it relates to, here's an opportunity for you to show us what you got. We're going to give you that opportunity, and we're going to see what you make of it.
That is very cool. It's a win-win.
It was an absolute win-win. In fact, we're turning the whole department to get on that prop next week. So that's kind of the gift that keeps on giving. And it's definitely a resource we'd be willing to share with any organization in our area. And it's also a resource that's being built far more frequently now in other states as well.
So how is your department's training program structured?
So our training program is structured really using the umbrella of task books. So one of the feedback points we got from new hires over the past several years was, you know, the concept of, can everybody in the organization do this? Or, you know, when's the last time somebody else did this skill? And we had the choice to say, hey, you know what? You're the new person. Don't ask those questions. We've been here longer, so we know better. Or we could say, hey, you know, we have been here. We can do those things, and we're going to do it on an annual basis because we think they're important. So we have three different task books paramedic task book, firefighter task book, and a driver operator task book. And our trainings for the year are basically representative of all the skills that are in those books, to the point where the ultimate goal is to check those off every year. And those task books are the same exact skills that we expect out of our probationary members. So we don't want the only time in your career that you throw a 24, 28, or 35-foot ladder to be during your initial recruit training. We want to make sure we're providing those opportunities year in and year out. And frankly, we're lucky to work in an organization that values training and appreciates those opportunities.
Well, we just talked with Jennifer Stanislaw last week about using different styles of teaching instead of death by PowerPoint.
Yes.
How do you reach the 21-year-old probie and the 30-year-old probie at the same time in the same class?
So a lot of our training is conversational, and a lot of it is based on demonstration, which allows our current members to really take the ball and run with it in terms of knowing our equipment, knowing our policies, practices, procedures, and so on. And we really try to dissect these things in an interesting, you know, fun and sometimes entertaining way, but realizing that we have to get through the material. So we've, over the years, relied less and less on PowerPoint. A lot of it is kind of mixed media, where we're using maybe a one-page training poster. That one-page training poster is the document that we refer to during our hands-on drill. So that always starts with the why, our posters. We refer to those as elevator pitches. That's probably our standard lesson plan for most of the skills that we conduct. And it allows us to have a conversation. So what we're talking about is at the top, and then it goes into why do you need to know this? When would you do it, and how do you do it? So whether it's window-based search, door-based search, flowing and moving, exterior fire control, interior fire control, any of those topics, we use a lot more hands-on demonstration-based skills before we get into the actual drills and scenarios than we do straight PowerPoint.
All right, some great ideas. Hopefully people can apply them to their own departments. Jesse Marcotte, thanks for talking with me today on Code 3.
It has been my absolute pleasure.
And there is a link to more details about the training program at Jesse's department on our website, code3podcast.com/mentoring. Go ahead, take a look. You may find some ideas you can apply to your department. Now, if you've been a firefighter for more than a year or two, you've undoubtedly been part of a response that went wrong, one where you had an oh shit moment, but you managed to get out of it somehow. And that's what we're looking for, the story that can teach other firefighters a valuable lesson. After all, you can learn from experience or you can learn from the experience of others, and in this business, the latter is much safer than the former. So let's get that lesson out to the firefighting community. Tell it on this podcast. Here's an example from Jeremiah King.
I heard a loud pop, didn't know what it was, and then quickly it was followed by several more clear pops in, you know, one right after another. So it was pop, pop, pop. And then the collapse happened. And I will never forget that sound and what it means. I started running towards the door as the massive vaulted ceiling fell directly behind me. I felt the wind and the dust rush past me in a thick cloud. Fortunately, everyone got out without any injuries.
That's from episode 336, titled Last Man Out. If you have a story you'd like to share, just email me at scott@code3podcast.com. And let your brothers and sisters in the fire service know how you got out of that jam. All right, that's it. That's all for this edition of Code 3. Thank you for listening. I'll be back next time with more, and I hope you'll join me. I'm Scott Orr, and until then, stay safe.
To contact us, get more information on today's show, or to subscribe to the podcast, go to code3podcast.com.